Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast, show number 3, recorded December 16th, 2010. The podcast for you and your friends with tech questions. We're your family's tech guys. Friends having tech home tech issues? Can't figure out the new iPod? Have no idea how to work the new cell phone? Having trouble with your wireless router? We know you know how to fix it, but they don't. While this podcast is for you, it's mostly for them. We talk tech, but for the average guy. Today I'm joined again by my trusty cadre of tech guys. We have Brian Burgess. Brian's a longtime blogger with How To Geek. Brian, you're just kind of a writer extraordinaire. You seem to be showing up everywhere. You're at The Average Guy. That's our site, and at thehomeservershow.com. And you've been writing on kind of 101, PC 101 and Home Server 101 themes. And I think you got some upcoming blog posts as well on some other stuff. We won't give those away, but how are you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. We're going to keep you busy over the next couple weeks, I think that's for sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we also have Christian Johnson. Christian's a developer with Maple Grove Partners and is a website administrator as well as a BIOS developer, which sounds really important. But that's over at bios.mods.com. Christian's also an active supporter in the Windows Home Server community, and I think you're pretty close to releasing an add-on, right? Is that
that's
public?
Right.
Can I say that? What's going out the door, if you're willing to share it?
Yeah, I'll give you guys a little insider. We're getting ready to go live with Magic Wake on LAN for Windows Home Server, which is going to allow people to wake up their client machines from anywhere within their home server remote site so that they can use remote desktop. And it has a console side to it as well as a web application that utilizes a feature in web browsers called AJAX, which means it's updating information on the page without a page refresh. So you're just seeing dynamic information without having to, click that refresh button. So that's really cool.
So what that means to me is I'm off-site somewhere. I'm not around my PCs. I can go to my home server website. I can log in. And even if my PC's asleep, I can send a signal to it that wakes it up and allows me to do kind of remote desktop or remote control of it, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then how does the AJAX play in then with that once it's awake and I'm using it? How does that play in?
Yeah. AJAX is monitoring network activity from the home server.
Got
so
it.
Whenever data changes, you're automatically seeing those changes without having to know to refresh the page. So if your computer, if you send the wake up command and then it sees that your computer is on the network, you'll know that because your notification status for that computer will change.
Very cool. So if folks wanted to get some more info on that, where are you going to post that out at?
We're going to be releasing some more information soon right at maplegrovepartners.com, and you can also hit up thehomeservershow.com as well as mediasmartserver.net for more upcoming information.
It's all over the place. And I'm sure we'll probably talk about it sometime soon on the Home Server Show. So
yes.
Good stuff. All right, good. Well, that sounds fun. We've speaking of sounding fun, this week, of course, if you've been following the news at all, and I don't even think you need to be a tech enthusiast to know that Gawker, and Gawker's a website out there that, like a lot of sites, collects people's collects some information about them through a login, right? So I go out there, I can subscribe to some of their services, and I think their most well-known one is Lifehacker. And it's a news kind of tech news information site. And this week they announced, or more likely revealed, that they had lost or there had been a breach of security and like 1.3 million username and passwords were released into the wild. Now those sites are Lifehacker, Gizmodo, Gawker, Jezebel, IO9. And then a couple other ones that probably are not as popular or most folks that listen to this show maybe aren't on. There's a full list of those. We'll post them in the show notes at lifehacker.com where they talk about this. Christian, you're kind of the security guy in what we do here. What's your take on this incident and what would you recommend for people at this point?
Well, it's all about putting your trust in sites that you think you can rely on. Now, obviously, Gawker is a pretty relatively large site, so I even though I don't use it, if I were looking into it, I would probably put my trust in it. So,
sure.
All these accounts were compromised, change your passwords. Well, what does that mean for the average person? So if you're a person who has a word out of the dictionary as your password and you're using that on every single thing you own out in the internet, well, then that notice could have been pretty significant for you. You could have think, oh my goodness, someone has my password now for one account. Who's to say they aren't going to figure out how to get on my other accounts?
Right.
So for the home user, understanding that using separate passwords or separate accounts and making them secure and strong enough so that these dictionary attacks and other basic forms of getting passwords can't be used. That way, you know, if your Gawker account is lost, so what? All your other accounts are secured under different passwords, and you keep the master password for all that on your desktop. So,
yeah. Is it realistic to think, though, that the average user is going to be able to create multiple or different passwords for each site or variations of that and be able to remember that? I mean, is that really very realistic for most?
If you weren't having, if you didn't have anything like to kind of help facilitate the process, then yeah, I think it would be asking a bit much because you'd start remembering. I get this every day. You'll start remembering all these different passwords, and then you'll get a tech support call, and the person will say, "How do I reset my password?" Well, I just reset the password, and now I can't remember it. Can you reset it for me? Hey, can you help me recover my password? So it's really important that you kind of make a decision. One great thing that I kind of advise to a lot of people is to use RoboForm. RoboForm.com is the best. It's undoubtedly the best password manager for Internet Explorer, and I believe it supports Firefox and Chrome and all those other browsers. And it does a great job. I mean, unbelievable. You can set all the different passwords for each website and put that all under a master password if you want. And then once you're logged into your computer and you're browsing websites, it knows which password to use for which site. So it'll automatically fill your password and stuff and save it. And you can back up all that information so that if your computer gets wiped out somehow, you can just redeploy RoboForm and you'll be right back to where you left off. I think a lot of people get discouraged with that method because I myself have never had a good experience with the Internet Explorer password manager. It always seems to be really flaky as to remembering when to fill and submit passwords. But RoboForm, before the page is even loaded, the username and password is going to be there. You won't even have to think about it. And really, the only thing you'll have to remember is the master password if you want to lock all your other passwords so people can't go snooping through your RoboForm.
Now, that's going to be limited to my PC, right? So does that RoboForm profile follow me from PC to PC, or is that something I have to install on my local PC and then every other PC that I work on? So my work PC might be different than my home PC. How does that work?
Right. Well, you can back up your profile information, so you can just copy that over to your RoboForm at work. But because RoboForm, there's like a trial version which saves and remembers up to, I think, 10 passwords, and then you can get the pro version, which really isn't that much of financial contribution, and supports Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome. So yeah, you can just easily replace those profiles, but you want to check and make sure that whatever you paid for in terms of a license, you're not breaking license agreements by installing the pro version on more than one.
Okay. But they're not web enabled. In other words, I can't go out to the web, create a password in one place, and then have that populate my browser sessions no matter where I'm at.
I believe you're right. That's not the model. Which in some ways, if you think about it, in some ways, that's probably a blessing, because imagine if someone were to just another Gawker incident, you know, imagine if it happened to RoboForm. That would have all your passwords in one deal.
Yeah, that is a drawback to having a password, like a LastPass or something, you know, along those lines where you do keep them in one. They really just have to hack one, and then they've got them all.
Right, which a couple cool things here. The full platform list for you guys is IE, Firefox, Chrome, Safari. And they have this cool thing called RoboForm to go for USB. So you can keep all your stuff on a USB drive and then just plug in the USB drive to whatever computer you're working on. They also have mobile platforms for your iPhone and iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry, Winmo, Palm and Symbian. So really, they're covering everything and anything. Your passwords are there, and it'll keep you secure.
And I imagine those got real popular this week. LastPass and RoboForm and some of those.
Right.
Brian, how do you manage your passwords? Are you old-fashioned guy and just have them in your head, or do you got a system?
Well, I have some of them in my head, and I also use LastPass.
Okay.
Which is a
And how does that work?
Well, it's a plug-in that you can use for, say, Firefox, and then it will you have a master password. It stores them, it encrypts them, and then they'll follow you between machines.
Okay, so that does kind of fit the bill then for me if I want to. You know, I've got 5 PCs in my house. Sometimes I'm working on the kids. Sometimes I'm on my wife's laptop. Sometimes I'm on my PC. Sometimes I'm on the Mac. Would that follow me around as I'm browsing in different sessions as long as I'm using Firefox? Is that how that works?
Well, it also works. They have an add-in for Internet Explorer, Safari, Chrome. Okay. Works with Linux, Apple, and Windows.
Okay. So, but that would follow me around. Yeah, I would do something. What would I need to do? So you're on one PC and you're in LastPass. So you go to another PC. What do you have to do to get that working on the next PC in your on the network?
You would just need to install the add-in again.
Okay. And then put in the master password, I assume.
Right. Okay. And then it syncs between all your sessions.
Okay. Well, you know, this really does highlight, I think, a growing problem in that every site has some kind of username and password. And I think, you know, I'll speak for a huge segment of the population. I think a lot of people use, you know, for simplicity reasons, they use a similar username and password for everything, right? I mean, it's just one. If you're not using something that's helping you remember it, how in the heck do you remember it? You know, any other way. So, you know, I'm in a boat. I'm in that boat now where I really feel like I've got to go change everything, and I haven't quite gotten to everything yet. But I got username and passwords in places I can't even remember.
Right.
So it is kind of a mess. And as I was reading about it, the Gawker folks didn't seem all that concerned that it had really caused that much damage. I mean, they were kind of like, well, sorry. I mean, don't you think this has created kind of a mess from a username and password standpoint? Because it's 1.3 million and we don't know who's in that 1.3 million, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in some ways, yeah, it's a huge concern. But I mean, in other ways, you know, at once it's happened, you know, what else can you do?
Yeah.
But the thing is preventing it from happening in the first place, which we all know, you know, Facebook's had security issues, you know, all these things are open to phishing issues and stuff. So it's really, you know, security in general is something that the home user needs to be aware of. Not as much how it works, just as how to keep your own data protected.
Yeah.
And just to add on to the RoboForm stuff, they do have a new plan that I haven't been aware of because I haven't checked it out in a while, called RoboForm Everywhere, which does sync it with one license for all your computers, and that is over the internet using a secure AES SSL encryption.
Oh, so, very cool. Okay, so those have been updated. What's the price on that? Do you have that?
So it's $19.95 a year for your license, and then the additional InSync Global is $9.95. So it's the math is $1 a month to have that kind of peace of mind. They support everything and everything.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll throw both those out there in the show notes and encourage folks to take a look at find the one. It's kind of like cloud storage, you know, and backup. You got to kind of pick the one that works best for you.
Right.
So go out there and take a look. I did in the statement that was released, it's some interesting wording. So I'm just going to read it word for word because I don't want to scare people. So it said, our user database appeared to have been compromised. The passwords were encrypted. So that's important. It's not like the passwords are out there in the clear. But they say, but simple ones may be vulnerable to a brute force attack. So if you had 1, 2, 3, 4 or ABCD or, you know, fill it password or password one or whatever, you know, some of those common passwords that folks use because it's easier for them to remember. It says here you should change your Gawker password and on any other site in which you use the same password. They say we're deeply embarrassed by this breach. We should not be in this position of relying on the goodwill of the hackers who identified the weaknesses in our system. And yes, the irony is not lost on us. And the irony is that they report on this stuff kind of all the time, and they're the ones that got caught up in this. So, anyways, I think it might be a good a good precaution to go out and maybe change some of your passwords at this point. If you had, right? I mean, if you had a Gawker account or you signed in at Lifehacker or one of those sites. If you didn't, you're relatively safe, right?
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, I guess after what you just read, to kind of put in perspective for users, so there's this SQL database probably with all these encrypted username and passwords, right? So there's a cipher which Gawker.com has.
Yeah.
So it's probably some huge, complex decryption cipher sequence that would be able to read it in clear text. The hackers did not gain access to that cipher. That cipher is probably locked off and probably even off the web server for that matter.
Yeah.
But what they're saying is that because passwords with low-level digits and simple numbers, it may be possible for the encryption not to be as strong. So
right.
By brute force attack, they're talking about someone just running that encryption through a bunch of different ciphers until they get lucky, which for someone to be targeting someone with a small password and spending all that time seems very, very unlikely. So in retrospect, the security flaw was significant for Gawker, but to me, if my password were compromised in encrypted form, I wouldn't feel that threatened by it, which isn't to say not to be unaware and off guard. It just means that you need to be that person that has the secure password in the first place and doesn't have to worry about 1, 2, 3, 4, which is just knowing how to have good password policies.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I use caps and numbers and special characters every chance I get. And I try to mix those up into, you know, sometimes using numbers in place of letters and, you know, in a way that makes sense to me. And so there's some creative ways that you can create passwords that are easy to remember that are still complex and would be hard to kind of brute force. And that, Brian, on your passwords, I assume, you know, you do a lot of stuff on the web. I assume you're following very similar kind of password creation procedures.
Oh, yeah. I use caps, numbers, and special characters for all of my passwords.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to. So it sounds bad on the surface. I think after talking about it, I maybe feel a little better about it, thinking I've got a pretty strong encrypted password, you know, a pretty strong password. I'm not as worried maybe as I was when I first heard about it.
Yeah, and Lifehacker has a really good frequently asked questions page that I think we'll have in our show notes.
Sure. Folks can go out there and take a peek.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let me move on. One of the things I did want to talk about tonight as well, and Brian, you've been doing some writing for us around this, but you know, we talked, I think, in the very first show about blogging. And recently, and not recently, but there's another term out there called microblogging. And I think people microblog all the time and they really don't know they're doing it. And it's not important that they call it microblogging. But blogging has been around for a long time. That's nothing new. The popularity of microblogging, of course, has come up, and it really just is write micro short blog, which are those status updates that you make in Facebook, or those 140 character updates that you make in Twitter, or LinkedIn, or whatever those services are that where you put those short little updates. That's a really good example of microblogging, where blogging is best, you know, seen in the sites like at WordPress.com or like Blogger.com. The more traditional, longer blogs. You know, we write blogs, blog posts on our site here at TheAverageGuy.tv. It's really just an article, or, you know, and some people, I've gotten the feeling around blogging that some folks have been a little intimidated by it. I've said, hey, have you read my blog? And they're like, oh, yeah, I saw that. And I said, have you ever thought about blogging? And they say, oh, no, I could never blog. That's too hard. Well, I don't think it's too hard. And Brian, you spent some time kind of just breaking that down into a post that we just published today out at theaverageguy.tv. First talking about how you set up the site, and then later on we're going to release a post around what you use to update it. But why don't we go back a little bit and start us in the space of setting up a blog. What do we need to know? What do we need to do? Take us down that path.
Okay, so if you're ready to get your feet wet in the blogosphere, a good service to start with is blogger.com for beginners.
And why do you like that from a beginning standpoint?
The interface is really easy to use.
Okay.
It's very intuitive, and they walk you through each step. It's kind of wizard-based, so it's not too hard to get started with.
Okay.
And it's owned by Google, and you just need to enter in your Google username and password to begin using the site.
So if you don't have one, you would need to create – if you don't have a Google account, you would need to create one.
Right. Yeah, you'd need to do that first. And like you said, I do have a post up on theaverageguy.tv that anyone can check out and see what they can expect from blogger.com. Another good site for beginners is Tumblr. It's Tumblr. There's no E like you'd think there is. Tumblr.com. And that's good for the average user as well. Although they have had some recent problems lately with keeping the site up.
Oh, really?
In fact, because of that, I'm going to be migrating my blog to WordPress, which is a little more complicated, but I would say start with blogger.com. If
okay.
you're, you know, getting your feet wet, you know, you want to create a quick, easy blog on whatever subject you want to write about. And it works really well, and that's where I started years ago. So
yeah, and actually, when I was first setting up blogs a couple years ago, I went with one on WordPress because I just wanted to see how it worked, right? So I set up one on WordPress and I set up one on Blogger, and because I thought I might do some AdSense, you know, stuff, which is a Google property, I went with Blogger as well. Ended up moving my blogs from Blogger to WordPress. Now, I do like, and maybe like you said, maybe because Blogger was easier to use in the beginning, but I don't think it has as many creative options when it comes to the way the blog is laid out and some different themes and schemes that you can add to it. WordPress has got a lot of those different things you can add to it to make it look, you know, to make it look nice. And so then I moved those from Blogger to WordPress, and even at one point Microsoft offered some blog space called spaces.live.com. They since have decommissioned that. That's not the right word. They're not going to support it anymore and are shutting that down. Christian, from a starting standpoint, you know, we mentioned Tumblr, we mentioned Blogger, WordPress. I'd mentioned Posterous, which is another easy to use blogging. Have we missed anything from a site perspective on where someone could start?
No, from a site perspective, those are really your major ones that you want to look at, and those are the ones that I recognize the name and trust.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then go ahead, Brian.
Oh, I was just going to say for, you know, the average person who's, you know, just getting started, blogger.com, you know, it's a good place to start out. But once you get going and you want more functionality, then, yeah, WordPress is definitely a much better choice.
Now, do
for
I get
more options?
Yeah, it does give you a few more options as far as templates and such, just in the way the look and the feel. Hey Brian, do I need to be concerned? So when I'm logging in for the first time and I'm creating this blog site of sort, you know, I don't get to pick whatever URL that I want, right? I can't if I wanted theaverageguy.com. I couldn't go to WordPress right out of the chute and grab that URL and make that happen, right? It's gonna create a URL for me, but it's gonna be different than that, right?
In Blogger, you mean?
Yeah. So let's say Blogger for example. So I go to Blogger and I'm setting up a website. What kind of address am I gonna get from Blogger that I'm gonna share with my friends?
Yeah, it's gonna be your site name .blogspot.com.
Okay. And I get to pick that part, right? Assuming nobody else has taken it.
Yep.
Okay.
But you can use your own domain by pointing the MX. Is it,
and that gets a little more complex, but you can do that, right? I mean, that basically the averageguy.tv is really a WordPress blog where we point that. It's not on the WordPress servers, but we point that over. And so someone could do it. It's a little more complicated. You could go buy your own domain and point it to WordPress.com.
Right.
Or blogger.com, but typically you're going to get, say, my at WordPress, my blog could be jimtheaverageguy.wordpress.com. That's what I would share with people, right, for them to get there, or mysticgeek.blogger.com.
Well, Blogspot,
thank you.
Yeah.
How long, now you showed in your post kind of setting up that blog, how long do you think it takes to get through it from beginning to end?
5 minutes.
So it's pretty easy to get going. And then there's a couple different ways to update it, and you don't necessarily have to have a tool to do it, right? I mean, they create the ability for me to update or to put posts to the blog right there on the site. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And is that easy to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of logging in, clicking the link to create your new post, and then writing it up.
And I could...
And you can add multimedia features videos, pictures, and audio files.
So I could embed, if I had a YouTube link that I wanted to put in there, or if I had a music, if I wanted to share a music file, I could do all that right through the web interface?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Christian, what as you you've been a blogger, I'm going to say a while because you're just not that old, but you've done a lot of blogging. From your perspective of these free accounts that are out there, these free services, where do you kind of lean towards if you were going to use one of them?
You know, that's an interesting question for me because I never went to the introductory stuff that I always recommend and what we're recommending now as the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped right into my own WordPress deployment on my own sites and whatnot. But I would definitely say WordPress or Blogger is the way to go.
Okay.
At one point, I did create a Blogger account before I went and deployed my own WordPress stuff, and I just got that weird kudo... That weird ninja mindset, like, do I really want to be putting all my content on something that isn't my server? It's one of my caveats where I have to have my own stuff on my own server because I don't like it going to places that I can't control.
Yeah.
Which for me is a big deal, but for the average person is not a big deal at all. I always think of it as, the soccer mom blogs. I mean, how many soccer moms do you see using Blogger telling 200 other subscribed moms that they just took their kid to soccer practice and, they had a soccer mom meeting, what I mean?
And to be fair, right, I mean, lots of good communication about events and stuff go out through that. I mean, make fun of it, but there's a lot of good. I mean, blogging is just not about telling people about what you're doing, right? People are using it for all kinds of different. We use it. We have a user group. We have an Oracle user group here in the Omaha area, and we use a blog to let folks know events are coming. We post things about the events. You know, you can put pictures out there. You can write about it. You can do announcements. People can subscribe to it. It's a pretty helpful, easy to use tool to create your own billboard on the internet, basically. And so I'm kind of, I don't want to say unique, but I'm maybe different at this point because the averageguy.tv is a hosted blog site, right? We loaded WordPress software on a hosted server, and we have complete control over that environment, from the themes we use to the add-ins that we put on there. And that's a kind of that's the way you went, right? The way you like to go from a blog standpoint, right? I also have the averageguy.me, which is my personal running whatever else I want to put on there. That's a WordPress.com hosted blog where, Brian, like you and I talked about, I repoint that URL, the averageguy.me, I point that over to, and I think that's jimtheaverageguy.wordpress.com. I don't like that long URL, right? You don't want to, hey, go to my blog at jimtheaverageguy.wordpress. Nobody's going to remember that, right? So I bought, for $15, I bought a URL to shorten it up, and people can remember theaverageguy.me. So my running stuff is over there. So I do one of both. And it works real well for me. And if you looked at either one of them, you would have, I don't think you'd have any idea that one is hosted and one is not, so to speak. Did I get the terminology right on that, Christian? Is it hosted, the one that we do together, is that called hosted WordPress?
Yeah, hosting our own WordPress. It's not on the WordPress site, you know.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Brian, anything else you want to add to that post, or some tips? Let's talk about maybe some tips for some new bloggers. I mean, what kind of, if someone was going out there, you do a ton of writing. So if anybody was going to start writing a blog now, what kind of tips would you give them?
Well, right. For some general guidelines, what you want to do is post regularly. Keeping new posts out there, keep your readers engaged. You want to keep your content fresh, no matter what the subject is. And if you have comments enabled, you want to make sure to reply to them to get that community feel to your blog. If you've already written on a topic before, it's always a good idea to link back to your original article, as long as it's relevant, and that, you know, keeps people on your site a bit longer, seeing what you've written. Also, you know, you can link to other outside sites as well if they're relevant to the article in your posts. Also, you kind of want to keep your posts short and sweet as possible. You don't want to go off on long rants that, you know, don't really make sense or are difficult to follow. And you also want to remember that blogging sites now allow you to, like we were saying before, embed videos from, say, YouTube. You can upload pictures and audio files, which adds that multimedia experience to your site. And most importantly, it's important to have fun. It's not meant to be hard work unless you're trying to monetize it.
Right. And that's a great point.
That takes a lot of work.
When I first started blogging, I told people, I don't care if anybody looks at my blog. It's really for me to express myself and put it in a place where I could go back and look at it again myself. You know, maybe a year or two or three from now, I could go back and reread those posts. That's kind of like a diary, right? And I've, some people give me crap about that. But it should be fun in what you're doing. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's my number one recommendation.
You know, with a site like blogger.com, it's easy to keep in touch with your friends and family, share photos, home movies, things like that.
And here's a thing I didn't know until recently. You can actually make the whole site private if you want as well. If you just want to create a site like a diary or whatever, and you want to keep it private, you can do that. It doesn't have to be out to the whole world. You can lock that down so that only you have access to it. And it doesn't have to be on your PC. I mean, you can get access to it from anywhere in the world. You can upload things to it and keep pictures there or whatever that only you can see. So I don't think a lot of people know that you can make them private.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Christian, from a Google standpoint, right, the Google crawlers are everywhere. And so as I'm posting stuff out on my blog, what is Google doing with the material that I put out there?
Google is being amazing, to put it simply. You got tons of servers that are crawling the entire internet all the time. But from a blogger standpoint, there's a lot of things you can do to kind of raise your hand in the classroom and say, Google, come to my desk. Come read what I wrote on my paper, you know? So there's a lot of that in terms of writing blog posts that maximize on keywords that you think, like if someone were to search in Google, you would have a lot of those keywords in your discussion points. And also something we call a sitemap, which is something that can easily be done in WordPress. I know I haven't really checked it out for Blogger, but again, Blogger is a Google publisher tool, so you're pretty much confident in the fact that if it's on a Google published site, you're probably going to have your site constantly indexed by Google.
Mm-hmm.
But the sitemap is a complete listing of every link to your blog so that Google knows which links you want to make sure are indexed. But it's all about maximizing on search terms and how it's presented on the page and letting Google know of that. And there's a couple of tools that you can use if you're off Blogger, like Google Webmaster Tools, which is part of any Google account that lets you kind of monitor and track status. But that's just for general websites. If you're right in Blogger, I'd say the number one thing you want to just worry about is making sure your titles and your search terms, they maximize on words. So you're not wasting your title words. You're not wasting your first sentences. You know, those are the words that Google is going to add to its search index so that when someone's searching on Google or in another blog or site, that's how you come up. And another thing to note about integration with Blogger that I like, if you already have a Gmail account and anything else related to Google, you're already set for Blogger. You just log in and you just set up your profile. So that's great. Again, going back to the whole password user account, it's another user name and password you don't have to remember.
Okay. I'm going to put a blog post out there and it's going to get crawled. And it's going to show up on Google somewhere. I may not show up on the first page or the second page of a Google search, but it will be indexed. Now, I think both Blogger and WordPress have the ability to turn that searching off, I think. I saw a checkbox in there that says don't crawl my site. So you could turn that off as well if you're ultra paranoid. Of course, if you're probably that paranoid, you're probably not putting your information on a blog.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah,
but
I would say.
I would think. So what you're telling me is there are ways to game the search engine, right? It does not treat all sites the same, and there are things you can do to improve your odds of being picked up by a search engine like Google.
Right. Websites are not under the Declaration or the Constitution of the U.S. They do not all have unalienable rights. You're getting down on your knees and you're saying, Google, come to my site.
If that's what you want, right? I mean, everybody goes with that intention, but...
And I mean, think about it. You're talking about, for people who want to get interested in blogging or, you know, are kind of on the fence, you're talking about people who maybe just... And think about it. How similar is it posting something on your Facebook wall? What are you doing?
Sure.
You're posting some thought that you had on the internet for other people to read. And essentially that's what microblogging is. And then if you want to develop that into longer detailed articles and get people involved, that's what blogging is. And if you don't want to have to worry about paying for it and thinking about it and learning things technically, blogger.com is for you and you're right there. But Google isn't going to be like, oh, you're just another site, I'll make sure you're up on the top. No, you have to be a consistent content. You have to have good content. It has to be refreshed. And one huge thing to note about Google is that Google is all about change. And the more it sees your content slowly changing and taking form, the more the crawler is going to sit on your site trying to figure out what's happening, which in the long run will put you in more search results, get you higher in the search terms. Okay. With that comes linking, which doesn't really apply if you have a blogger.com address, but the more links to your website that are in other websites, the more valuable Google thinks that site is. So it's going to say, oh, these people know that this is a reputable site. It's related to their content. So I know that this site is promoting in this area of competition. So those are just kind of some basic meter measurement tools that you can use.
So let's critique Brian's most recent blog post to our site, right? So we're at the average guy.tv. You ready for this, Brian? We're at the average guy.tv, and you just posted how to get started blogging with blogger.com. So I'm assuming then, Christian, from what you just said, and the first sentence says, if you're interested in starting your own blog, there are a couple services that make it very easy to get started. So I'm thinking, if I'm the Google, you know, engine that's crawling this, the important words are on this are how to, started, and blogging. Am I close at all from what you understand? If someone was going for a search on how to get started with blogging, would this post higher in the search results because you use those words?
Yeah, and in some ways yes, and in some ways no. Let's think about this a bit. If I were to go to Google and I wanted to get a Blogger account, what would I type? I would just type Blogger and hit enter, and it would come up with blogger.com. Obviously, right. It's Google's site.
Yeah.
Now, let's say I wanted to search more on how to use Blogger. Then probably the person would type in how to use Blogger. So you see here, the word started is used instead of the word use. So then you kind of have to think a little bit. You have to think, and this is just your own thoughts. You know, you're really not going by, you know, some dictionary that tells you this word is used more than this word. But you have to think, if you're the person on the search engine, are people more likely to use the word used or how to use, or are they going to use how to get started? Definitely, though, the most important thing in this title, which obviously this has, is blogging. Blogging is the first search word Google is going to be like, I see blogging once, I see blogging a couple times in this paragraph, I see the word blog repetitively. So now Google thinks, okay, this post has to be about a blog. So you got the word blog, you've sold it, you've done as much as you can with it. Now you see blogger.com is a repeat, that's also going to go in. And then the word blogging comes up, and you start to see the pictures and the other stuff. But definitely in this post, from what I've read, blogger.com and the word blog are being capitalized.
Okay.
Now, the next thing to consider is how many people use the word blog in their articles. You know, if I just type in blog into Google, what's going to come up? Actually, the first thing that comes up is blogger.com. No surprise, because it's a Google-owned product.
Right.
But what's the second thing that comes up? Surprisingly enough, the definition from Wikipedia comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quote me on this. Please don't quote me on this. This seems to be a new thing that Google is doing, which is kind of scary but amazing at the same time. I get search results that are higher based on where I am. So mm-hmm. if I'm doing a search result in Buffalo, New York, Buffalo blogs information just starts coming up. But if I do that same search through a remote desktop that's in like a different state, and I'm in Pennsylvania, those things aren't going to come
up. Yeah, because my number four is Omaha Daily Photo when I type in blog, which is local to me.
Exactly.
Omaha TV News is number six. So yeah, you're right. They're doing some localization with that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, and if you type in exactly Brian's post getting started with Blogger, you'll see there's a couple other people who have that those keywords going on, but really there's not too many other people besides, you know, Google itself, which shows you the more, and this is obviously hard because probably a lot of people talk about these, but the more unique your keyword is, the more you have a better chance of securing that top slot early on. If you're already using a keyword that's been in the search system for a long time, you kind of have to push and tweak to really knock out other spots.
So you would want to consider a keyword like blogging, and then maybe a unique word. I mean, again, we're talking if you want to get noticed by Google, right? And Bing and on the other search engines. But So you might, is this what you're saying? I would want to put something that maybe is a keyword like blog or blogging, and then a unique word that may not show up in other places. Would that maybe increase my odds of showing up on the first page of Google?
Yeah, and again, there's no science to this.
Right.
There's no rule of thumb. It's really just how you tweak your words and doing it often. So I'm not saying go back and keep editing all your posts, but I'm saying keep your content fresh.
Yeah, right.
And just put a couple seconds of thought into what keywords you're going to use.
Brian, when you are writing, because you do a lot of writing, right? I mean, you got a lot of articles out at How To Geek, and you've been writing for us. From a titling perspective, do you put, how do you kind of approach that? Does it just kind of, you just kind of put whatever it is, or do you intentionally go about it from thinking, how is this going to get picked up on a search engine?
I kind of look at what a creative title is and how it pertains to the content of the article.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely put a lot of thought into into the titles.
Yeah.
Creative titles are very important.
Yeah. And is it more important from a creativity standpoint? So sometimes I put catchy phrases in my titles that make sense but aren't, you know what I'm saying, they don't make sense to the article. They may not have any of the words in it that pertain to the article, but it's a play on words. Am I kind of screwing myself when I do that from a search perspective? You know, like... Yeah, you know what I mean on that, Christian?
Yeah. Let's kind of break this down again. It depends on the reputation of the site.
If
the site is a brand new domain and Google's like, whoa, where did this site come from? You know, this is kind of a low, it's low on the totem pole. It kind of has to build its reputation. So if you're one of these big sites like, you know, Engadget or something, you know, we're talking top of the line big sites, I guarantee you could probably write anything in the title and it would show up in the top search results because Google knows that it's such a reputable site. They're putting out good content and their links are in a ton of other websites. But if you're starting off lower on the totem pole, maybe you want to consider, is this title a bit wacky? You know, what's the chance of it coming up? Which, if you're just looking to have a blog where you know there's only going to be a certain set of people reading what you write, that's fine. Make it whatever you want.
Okay.
But if you're going for the Google and you're going for the gold, go for good titles until you build up some reputation.
Okay. Good. I think it's good advice. Brian, any other advice from someone just getting started?
I think we've pretty much covered them all.
Okay, good. Well, hey, you know, if folks want to, you know, the two of you have a lot of experience on this blogging and you know, search engine optimization and such. So if they do would like to get in touch with us, you could just send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Ask your questions and we'll come back around to them on a show and answer those. I think there's a lot of people that probably should have a lot of questions around that, so they can ask us and we'll get those answered on the show. Okay, last thing as we wrap this up, I want to kind of do a fun little bit and talk about apps in the news. And these are apps for phones. You know, I mentioned before I've recently switched over to Android, and so I'm kind of excited about all the new apps that are coming to Android and such. But two new apps that I just saw, and then for the Android and one for the iPhone. The first one is a LinkedIn app, and it's ironic that I was just the other day looking for that in the Android market space, and I couldn't believe there wasn't one there to interact with LinkedIn. And so, you know, that's a huge business, community, social media site, and a lot of folks, and that just continues to hang on. At one point, I didn't think that was going to survive, but it continues to hold on. So now in Android, there's now a LinkedIn app that was on the iPhone before. And then there's a new update to Google Maps on the Android as well, and I cannot believe how good some of this Google mapping is, especially on a phone, and it's in 3D. And so if you have an Android device and you want to check out maps now on your phone in 3D, you can do that as well. And if you haven't seen Google Maps in the last 6 months, certainly go out there and take a look at it. They are just getting dynamite when it comes to being able to represent locations on a map. So the other thing I wanted to mention on that is also EA. So EA makes a lot of game software. You probably know them by Madden, the Madden game series, NFL. They've dropped, in some cases, up to 90% off of some of their game apps for the iPhone or the iPod. So, Brian, this is for you. They've taken games like The Sims 3, Madden NFL 11, which I can't imagine playing Madden on the phone, but I guess you can. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, FIFA, that's a soccer game, and Tetris. All of those have dropped from at least $6, some of them are $4, all the way down to 99 cents. So if you're on the iPhone and you're looking for a good game to play, EA is running a sale and you can run those out fairly inexpensive. Brian, on your Touch, I know you're not an iPhone guy, but you're an iPod Touch. What kind of apps or apps are you running the most at this point, and what do you like that's out there?
The Kindle Reader for the iPhone, iPod Touch, mm-hmm. iPad is really good for reading your e-books on the go.
Is that a free app?
That is a free app.
But you buy the books, right? That's how they make their money?
Right. Okay. You have to buy the books.
From Amazon.
Right? Okay. Yep, correct. And the other one that I use a lot is Pandora, which allows you to make a customized music radio stations.
Right. And in your particular scenario, you're kind of out in the sticks, right?
Yeah.
Where you live. And so radio is, I don't know, do you have good access to a lot of radio stations as far out as you are?
You know, I don't even listen to radio anymore.
Yeah. It's just too easy in Pandora to pick a band and let the thing run.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever listen to the Home Server Show live, we broadcast Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock on the Ustream. And if you just go to homeservershow.com/live, you can get the show right there. But I use Pandora to stream the music for the pre-show. And you know, you just I say first one in the forums or first one in chat gets to pick the music. They pick a band. You put the band in Pandora. You play it, and it just plays. I mean, it doesn't keep playing that band, right? It plays bands that are similar to that band.
And it'll find similar artists too.
Do you just use the free account on Pandora?
Right now I am, that is ad supported.
Yeah.
But you can get Pandora One.
Okay.
And it's $36 a year. And that removes all the ads and also provides higher quality music streams.
Yeah, and even the free stuff, though, streams just fantastic. I can't tell the difference between that and, you know, a poor stream. And I imagine in a business, if you wanted to stream it all day, I think that's the other limitation on Pandora on the free, is it checks to say, hey, are you listening? If you haven't interacted with it in a while, it'll shut it off. And on the paid version, it just keeps it on.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about it is if you get a song or an artist that doesn't really fit the genre of what you're looking for, you just hit the thumbs down button, and it won't play that anymore.
Yeah.
And it'll look for more similar types of music.
Right. Yeah, Pandora is has been wildly successful and is very popular. So if you haven't tried that yet, Christian, does your Winmo have Pandora on it?
I don't particularly have it installed, but I'm sure they do have Winmo. Okay. All the Home Server Show guys know I'm a Subsonic fanatic, and always will be a Subsonic fanatic. So with that being said, my Winmo app of the week to counter your Android apps.
Yeah.
Is the Mort player. Yeah.
Say that again.
Mort player, M-O-R-T player. Yeah, okay. It's all one word. And really, it's a media player, to keep it simple. It can play anything that you have saved on your phone. It's really great with playing streams, so I can pick a Subsonic stream, and it'll stream right to the Mort player. It's got a really nice Windows Vista-style look to it. Really easy to use, and so say I get a Pandora stream and I get it in, you know, the M3U mobile phone format, this thing will play it, and it really does play anything, and I really like the interface and usability of it. So that's really that's
excellent.
That's what I use for media on here. I used to use the built-in media player, but I'm very keen on the more player and the functionality that it has, especially for internet streaming.
You know, Christian, you've kind of restored my faith in WinMo 6.5. I just kind of thought there was nothing good on that, you know.
No, I'm practically married to it, you know. I love the Froyo.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those, it's crushing people in the marketplace. It's taking over, you know. Now you see they're talking, they just confirmed Froyo 2.2 for the next Barnes & Noble Nook. I mean, who would have thought they would have taken something that was designed for the cell phone to go to all these tablets that are coming out? And I guarantee you, the number one person they're going head-to-head with is Steve Ballmer with his little Windows 8 touchpad demo. And I guarantee you, it isn't going to be the easy slam down everyone thinks. I mean, you were talking earlier about Google and how amazing the integration was with the Maps 3D.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Sprint Evo 4G and you got that Google Maps app, when you pull up at the destination and it says destination arrived, you're looking at the street view of the house or wherever that you're at. I mean, it doesn't get any cooler than that. You can't tell me that there's a Microsoft product that's going to do that.
Yeah.
And it's just Google dominates with integration, and for anyone else to tell me that Google isn't leading in integration right now is a fool, because anything that's Google, I guarantee you it's one account, it does everything, it can go on one device, it can go on any device, and you got this little thing that says droid every time something happens, and at the end of the day, you know there's this robot sleeping next to you on your counter, and you can do anything wherever you need.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How much more could you ask for?
I've liked my droid, and I am anxious to see, and I'm hoping to mess around with the Windows 7 phones at CES when we go out there in January, but I've enjoyed the Droid experience, and we live in an amazing time, and there's just tons of amazing technology out there. Really, almost so much, it's overwhelming, and this is kind of why we do the show, because sometimes it's hard to weed that stuff out. So, all right, well, guys, thanks for we've reached our hour, and I appreciate you guys coming out tonight and taking a few minutes to to kind of go over this stuff. You know, the feedback of the folks that listen is important to us, and we know in some of these early shows we don't have tons of listeners out there yet. But if you are listening to this, we'd love your feedback on the format, on what we're talking about. We'd love for you to interact with us. You can post on the forums, of course, or not the forums, but post on the blogs. We haven't set up forums yet. Not quite enough people to do that. But if you send an email to podcast@theaverageguy.tv, that gets to us, and then we'll have an opportunity to interact with you. Or you can post right there on the blog, you know, when we put out blog posts, and that also helps us know what's going on out there, so we'd appreciate that as well. Guys, I am considering, and I'll get your quick advice on this, of shutting off the Average Guy TV on Twitter and just going back to my own, you know, promoting the show through the Jay Collison on Twitter thing. You know, because it's kind of hard to post to two places on Twitter all the time. I mean, should I keep it, or should I just ditch it and go with Jay Collison? What do you think?
Buy a second Android phone and do the one post on one account and the other post on the other phone.
Okay, Brian, what do you think?
I think the more pimping we can do, the better.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. It's one of those things that I'm not sure on Twitter it necessarily matters. It's the followers that matter and not the name of what they're following.
Right.
And so, you know, it's one of those things where updating it in two places is not as effective as in one. And anyways, I'm considering doing that. So we've said on the show you can follow us at The Average Guy TV on Twitter. We've got about 30 followers at this point, and I'm deciding on whether I'm going to keep that or just move all that stuff over to my personal account. But anyways, neither here nor there. We've done a bunch of updates on the website. All the RSS feeds and the iTunes links are up to date. And so if you want to download this directly to your iPod or music player of choice, you can get that information out there and put it in your Zune or your Google Listen or any of those things that you would use for RSS. And if you don't know how to do that or do it automatically, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll help you get through that. I do podcast every week. I mentioned it earlier on the Home Server Show. And so you can join us Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock over there at thehomeservershow.com/live. One more notice. If you enjoy the content here, we do have affiliate links out on theaverageguy.tv that help us pay for the stuff like web hosting and bandwidth for the podcast. So if you get a second, visit the site, click through the links, and if you purchase something, it helps us pay for all these expenses. So it doesn't cost you any extra to do that. In fact, some of the links out there have special deals built into them. Currently, I would point you to a ThinkGeek if you've ever bought anything from ThinkGeek. Either of you guys bought anything from ThinkGeek before?
I haven't, no.
They sell T-shirts and gadgets. It's all geek gadgets. Pretty cool. You should go out and take a look at that. Good store. And then, of course, Newegg. We're all hooked on Newegg, and if you haven't bought a computer gadget from Newegg, they're worth checking out, newegg.com. Those links are out there as well. Well, guys, that'll do it for tonight. We hope you come back next week and listen again. And remember, you don't have to do this tech thing alone. We're out there to help you. So, guys, have a good night, and thanks for being out there.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.